week of February 23rd, 2020. This is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 482, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz. I forgot to ask, will there be a show next week?
Yes, why wouldn't there be?
Because you never know with you. You've got travels, conventions, everything's shut down now because of the coronavirus, so you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, you know, I know we're going to be talking about COVID-19 and the coronavirus and what it is doing to the entertainment
world.
Business, the entire world, really. But I know that there are lots of conventions and seminars and meetings that are basically being canceled.
Yeah. I was watching gymnastics this week. There's a competition in Melbourne, and the Chinese players were not permitted to come to the country, which means they've lost an opportunity to qualify for the Olympics as individuals. There are other opportunities in the few weeks ahead, but that's just a brutal, brutal blow. You work your whole life for an Olympics. They only come once every 4 years, and you may have just lost a chance to compete. That's just heartbreaking. Obviously, people have died. The businesses are in turmoil, so there's lots of ripple effects around the world, and we'll get to it. But what else will we talk about on the show?
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we are holding our breath. I mean, not literally, Michael. I mean, the entire entertainment business seems in a state of suspension thanks to the U.S. presidential primaries and the looming threat of a pandemic due to COVID-19 that we were just talking about.
Yeah, we were literally going, nothing happened. Nothing's happening. What's happening? Nothing.
Yeah, literally. We were like, I don't know. Did you take all the news stories? I didn't take all the news stories. Where are all the entertainment news stories? There are none. After the Grammys and the Oscars, industry news seems to have trickled to a halt. Nonetheless, a glimmer of hope for the showdown between writers and agents. That's good news. The two sides may see if a mediator can help them come to terms. Plus, the Alamo Drafthouse here in the U.S., that chain is the latest to offer a monthly subscription plan. On Inside Baseball, we've got the latest on how the virus, COVID-19, coronavirus, is messing with movie releases, theme park openings, and even boy band press conferences. Michael, I said we could not do a press conference in person, okay, because we, first of all, we don't sing. And
Keep going.
Okay, well, all I can say is, good heavens, can't we at least spare the lads of BTS from any headaches? They've got enough on their plate dealing with all the heartaches they cause. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss the week's top entertainment headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's box office.
That's right, and we're looking at box office around the world. China is still shut down. It's unbelievable. The second biggest market in the world is not doing any business. Imagine if the North American box office simply stopped for a few weeks. That's clearly going to have a huge effect on the entire year's box office worldwide and for China, and to a lesser degree, certain films coming from the U.S. that look to that big market for some big bucks.
Well, now, of course, in northern Italy, a lot of the theaters are closing, and they're thinking of maybe closing them all throughout Italy.
Well, obviously, this could spread all over the world. People in the U.S. are like, it's so far away. Well, give it a week. But we are looking at box office around the world. We have a link to ComScore in our show notes. We also pull information from all those other sources. And the number one movie around the world is Sonic the Hedgehog, a film that just delayed its China release. But it made $103 million this week. It's at $203 million worldwide.
Would think that Sonic could have like raced over there really fast and released itself before the coronavirus, you know, kind of got out of hand.
That possible. What's not possible, you can make a convincing Sonic the Hedgehog, but you can't make a convincing dog. That's the message of The Call of the Wild, our number two film. It opened to $40 million this week and very poor reviews for the all CGI dog that's at the heart of the story. Harrison Ford is along for the ride as well, but the dog is there. That meant the movie cost $125 million. It's just opened up in North America. It's a family-friendly movie, which means it should have some legs. We'll have to see how it does around the rest of the world, but a Chinese release has probably been pushed back, if not out of the question.
So I guess my question is, given how much hair Harrison Ford has now, which one was the dog?
He has more than I do. He has a lot. Oh, you think he's a hairy, hirsute old man? Oh, I didn't know.
No, with the big beard. You know, it was a beard joke. It was a joke about beards.
Oh, okay. You mean the character in the movie?
Yes.
All right. Well, here's a movie at number three. It's Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. That's actually okay. not the name of the movie. It's Birds of Prey or the blah, 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 blah of Harley Quinn. That was the official title. And for weeks, I have been looking at Birds of Prey and going, oh, yeah, the Harley Quinn movie. Oh, that's right. That's the Harley Quinn movie. Well, now the studio has unofficially told everyone, you know what? Let's just change the name of the movie to Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. So everybody knows what they're looking for. So on, if you look on your social media apps or in certain digital advertising and elsewhere, the movie has been rebranded as Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. If you look at the box office on the display, it says Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. They've changed the name of the movie midstream because they realized what a dumb title it was to hide the fact this is the Harley Quinn movie. Well, they've done that. The movie made another $41 million this week. I don't know how much of a difference it could make, but it was a smart move to do when you can do it. You know, it's something you can do on the fly. They realized they had done a dumb thing, and they have adjusted. Its total worldwide is $183 million. So it has more than doubled its budget. It's looking to get to triple the budget to get about $250 million. I think it's going to get there. At number four around the world is Parasite. Boy, has this movie benefited from winning the Oscar. The buildup for nominations and then the win has really powered this movie more than I expected. I thought it was mostly played out and it would really just benefit, you know, on streaming video on demand and Blu-ray and things like that. But nope, it made another $31 million at the box office this week. The Korean Oscar winner is now at $235 million and counting.
And it made $71 million in Korea, which makes sense,
wow.
right?
Yeah.
But that's a lot of money in Korea.
Absolutely.
And that's not to say Korea doesn't make movies that make a lot of money. They do. But $71 million, heck, it's a lot of money in the U.S. depending on how much you spent on the movie. But so I started looking at, of course, South Korea's box office because I wanted to see, you know, how COVID-19 was you know, affecting it. All the closures of cinemas or I don't know if they've closed cinemas in South Korea, but certainly
people just aren't going.
They're just not going, so they're effectively closed. And yeah, it's pretty down.
Like I mentioned a few weeks ago, I saw an ice skating competition in Korea, and everybody in the audience, which was half empty, was wearing a mask. That you know, that's not as unusual in certain Asian countries, but it was very notable there. And that movie cost about $11 million to make, so it's at $230 million worldwide. A big, big win. And number five is Bad Boys for Life, the Will Smith comedy, $23 million this week. It's just about to pass $400 million worldwide. And number six is Doolittle, the Robert Downey Jr. would-be franchise, another $23 million for that film. That's at $200 million worldwide. Then there's 1917. That won some key Oscar victories, but not the big one. Still, it made $15 million this week. It's at $350 million. A big, big win for that British film. Now, here's another film whose title I want to ask, how should we call it? What is its name? Is it Fantasy Island, or should we go along with the branding of the company and call it Blumhouse's Fantasy Island?
It's Blumhouse's Fantasy
Island.
Well,
no, I know what the official name is, but that doesn't mean we're going to do it. They might say, Michael Giltz and Sperling Reich present the film Goodbye America. You know, that doesn't mean you have to call it that. You could just call it Goodbye America. My question is, do you think it deserves to be called Blumhouse's Fantasy Island? And I kind of think it does because Blumhouse is a name brand horror franchise. When that company slaps its name on a movie, people, I think, are starting to recognize and go, oh, yeah, they make good horror flicks.
They're a brand.
I think they're a brand like Tyler Perry. He puts his name on every movie he makes. Blumhouse has said, we want our name in the title because we know people are looking for it and going, oh, yeah, we like them. They make good, dirty, down and dirty fantasy horror flicks. That's what's happened with Fantasy Island. It made $13 million this week. It's at $33 million worldwide, and that's all on a budget of $7 million. They got the rights, I assume, to Fantasy Island on the cheap, made a movie on the cheap, and now they're making money.
One of the funniest Twitter jokes I saw over the past 3 days was the fact that Blumhouse's Fantasy Island really is scary. In fact, the island was deserted in its second weekend in theaters. You know what? I can tell you that I was paraphrasing that joke and obviously not well.
Right below that is Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman. Nope, it's not called Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman. It's just called The Gentleman, but it is a Guy Ritchie crime film in the UK. $13 million it made this week. It's at $87 million and counting. So that's another success story. Right below that is Jumanji, The Next Level. That made $10 million. That's at $788 million worldwide. And then there's Little Women, $9 million for that flick, and now it's at $200 million worldwide. Now we have another new opening. It's Brahms, The Boy 2, a second in a horror franchise, though it's a standalone. So if you didn't see The Boy, don't worry. You'll be able to follow what happens. $8 million it made on its opening week. That's the same amount made by Ice 2. That's the Russian romantic drama set in the world of hockey and ice skating. It's sort of the Russian version of The Cutting Edge. That made $8 million this week. It's at $16 million and counting. Now we got
this was a huge hit in Russia, by the way. A huge hit. And it's supposedly a very good movie.
Well, that's $16 million. That's what it's made so far in Russia and worldwide. I think it's all in Russia. The Ice 1 was a big hit. Ice 2, I don't think, has opened up anywhere else, but it's pulling it in Russia. Now we got a lot of movies here. Emma, that new version of Emma we talked about, that made another $5 million, as did Jojo Rabbit, which is at $85 million worldwide. The Photograph, the film starring Issa Rae, is chugging along. That made another $5 million this week. It's only opened up in North America. It's made $17 million and counting. And here we go. Love, Aj Kul, the Indian reincarnation drama. That made a good $4 million this week. Richard Jewell opened up in some new territories. That's the Clint Eastwood film. It opened up in France, Indonesia, Finland, and Taiwan in the last 5 or 7 days. That made another $4 million, well needed for a movie that's at $40 million when it cost $45 million to make. Pardon me. Uh-oh.
You okay there?
There's no joke there. I just coughed. You're suddenly very happy we record in separate studios across the country from one another.
We've been trying to pretend that we were in the same studio this whole time.
That's right. Someday we'll do video. Won't that be exciting?
No, yes, it would be, well, if we actually figured out how to do it.
It's all up to you. Downhill, that remake of the Swedish film Force Majeure, that made $3 million this week. It's falling hard and fast in North America, but it is at $7 million and counting. I'm going to just scroll down through the new movies at the rest of our list. Ducopu Trois is a French film. Well, it's based on a Belgian comic book series. I don't know whether it's a Belgian film specifically or French, but that's the third in a franchise about a goofy kid in school. That opened to $3 million. Another movie opening up is another French film. It is This is Jour Sans Maman, or 10 Days Without Mommy. It's a French Mr. Mom. Apparently, mom goes away on holiday and dad has to take care of the kids. Hilarity ensues. I don't know whether that's a commentary, you know, recycling this idea from the 80s. Is that a commentary on French cinema or on men?
I think it's more about men.
This is still an idea that you go, oh my God, he has to babysit. I had a friend who used to get so annoyed when his wife would be doing something and this, he'd say, oh, well, I'm taking care of the kids today. But they'd say, oh, you're babysitting. He's like, no, they're my children. I'm not babysitting my own children. I'm taking care of them because I am the parent. But like the mom, then no one ever says she was babysitting because he's a dad. It's like, oh, you're doing something unusual. Anyway, Beast Clawing at Straws. That's another new film. It's a Korean thriller about groups of people who seem to come into a lot of money and try to kill anybody who gets in their way for keeping it. That opened up to $2 million. Now, here's a real low-budget movie. I couldn't find out how much it cost to make, but it's Impractical Jokers, the movie. It's a spinoff. It's a reality movie spun off from a TV show that's on True TV here in the U.S. I have seen this show out of the corner of my eye a few times and been like, wow, that's a really low-rent dumb TV show. It's just guys who sit there and make their friend go into a grocery store and act stupid, and they're speaking on earphones going, all right, now jump up and down and cluck like a chicken, or they make them say dumb stuff. It's just the stupidest, dumbest thing, but somehow it's successful enough. They've turned it into a movie. Have you ever seen this show?
No, I have not. Wait, what show is it?
It's just guys. It's these dudes who make each other go do practical jokes or behave stupidly in public while they laugh and speak to them on earphones. Say, okay, now you got to do this. Now you got to do that.
No, not at all.
What annoys me is the show is called Impractical Jokers, and impractical is in parentheses. But in fact, it's the M that should be in parentheses. It's practical jokers. So if they want to call themselves impractical jokers, the parens should be around the IM. It's annoyed me every time I see it. Now they're doing it with the entire film. Impractical is in parentheses. You guys, they're bad at jokes and they're bad at grammar. Moving down, there's another new film in Mexico. It's Las Pildoras de Mi Novio, My Boyfriend's Meds. It's a comedy about a woman who goes on a vacation with her new boyfriend who seems perfect, but he leaves his meds at home and suddenly starts behaving manically and all that. So it sort of makes fun of people who are on medication. I'm sure it's, you know, very sensitive to that. But it made $2 million this week. Oh, I forgot to look up how to pronounce this title. It's an Hindi comedy about two gay men, and their families are freaked out about them maybe getting married, and one of them is trying to force the guy to marry a woman. Hilarity ensues. It's called Shubh Mangal Zyada Savdan. I apologize for that one. It's sort of a Hindi Birdcage or the Wedding Banquet. I was going
to say, it sounds like Birdcage.
Well, Birdcage wasn't about the family trying to force one of the men. It just involves gay people.
Right.
It's about the son getting married and they're having to, a little embarrassed about his dad's, at least in the original one, La Casa Fo. La Casa Fo. So this is just about guys who are open and out, and one of their families is very resistant to it. But that's our box office worldwide. Who knows how much money has been left on the table, because the second biggest market in the world is not available.
I think the official amount is a lot, mm-hmm. a lot of money.
Well, we were talking about Parasite, and in fact, Parasite is getting a 1 week release in IMAX. I believe this is worldwide. Who the hell would pay money to see Parasite in IMAX?
They're releasing it in black and white. We got it done.
Yeah, did anybody even notice that happening? I didn't hear a single word.
We talked about it.
Of box office or reviews. How many screenings was it? Did anybody actually go? I don't know. I haven't heard a single word about it.
I'm talking about Bong Joon-ho talked about making that version of it and how they made it over a year ago. They like actually timed each shot for black and white. He just liked doing it. And so it was actually made properly.
No, it was not made properly. You cannot make a movie in black and white in post. You either shoot a film in black and white or you shoot a film in color. You cannot do both. It's not possible because the sets, the lightings, the costumes, everything is dramatically different when a film is shot in black and white. It is not just, we'll turn off the color. You can't do it in post. You can fiddle with it and make it seem like it's in black and white, but actually start artistically, you would make incredibly different choices in the costumes, the material, the clothing, the hair, the makeup. Everything would be different if you shot a film in black and white.
Bong, you can write to Michael at dirt@showbizsandbox.com.
Well, that's not how black and white movies are made. You can't just do it in post any more than, you know, it's not possible. There is a film that's not on our list, but it's doing very well. There are smaller box offices all over the world, movies that are hits in their home countries, but they don't break out and make $2 or $3 million in 1 week so that it breaks onto the Comscore chart so that we can cover it. But in Poland, there's a film called Warsaw, 365 days. And it's about a Polish couple who head to Sicily to heal their relationship. The woman is kidnapped by a mafioso who then holds her and says she has 365 days to fall in love with him. It's this crazy, over-the-top, twisted, erotic thriller a la 50 Shades of Grey or something. And it has sold 1.5 million tickets in 2 weeks. That's equivalent to 5% of the entire population of Poland going to see the film. So it's doing well at the box office, has not broken onto the Comscore charts, but, you know, it's a hit. And if you know of a hit that should be on our list or didn't make it but is doing really well in your country, maybe it's ripe for remake, let us know.
Yes, you can write to us, Bong, at dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're on Twitter, where our handle is @showbizsandbox. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox. And in fact, we'll be reading a listener email at the end of this show.
Oh, I didn't know that. One of my favorite directors, Australian George Miller, he did a black and white version of Mad Max Fury Road. And I have the same complaints. I love that guy. I think he's great. And they did this whole elaborate black and white version that he put a lot of effort into, as I am sure Bong did. But nonetheless, it's just something that has to be done from the get-go. But anyway.
Another film that didn't make our charts because it's only in three theaters is Seberg, the biopic of Jean Seberg, although it's really only a portion of her life.
Wow.
It cost $8 million to make. However, it made some ridiculous like per screen average on, again, it's being platformed. So this is the first week it's out. I was supposed to see it this weekend. I'm going to see it tonight.
Well, there's always a number of films. It made $20,000 per screen. It's on three screens. That's not a huge amount. That's a perfectly lovely start. But, you have to get into the high five figures or six figures to be a really, you know, massive, crazy amount of money in terms of per screen percentage, but that movie opened up and made $60,000 this week. It's on three screens. It's from Amazon Studios, so it'll be on Amazon any minute now. There's also, it didn't make as much money as Cat Video Fest 2020. Somebody, Oscilloscope, gets together cat videos and puts them on the theaters. It played on 30 screens and grossed $220,000. Good Lord, Cat Video Fest. I wonder if either of those are playing at Alamo Drafthouse.
I don't know, but I think that Buffalo it is, and Buffalo it is, if you don't, I saw this film, it's a fun movie starring Zoe Deutsch. Mm-hmm. You should it's not everywhere, unfortunately, so I wonder if it is, I think it might be playing at, I think it's playing at the Arclight here in Los Angeles, come to think of
it. Well, if it was at Alamo, you could get their monthly subscription plan and see that in all the movies you wanted. One movie a day, every day. That's their new plan. They have a couple tiered levels. Basically, if you're in New York and LA or San Francisco, you pay $30 a month. And if you're in most other cities, you can pay $20 a month. That's Austin and seven other cities. And there's one location, which is in a smaller town, where you can only have to pay $15 a month. But basically, it's a flat fee, $20 to $30. You get to see one movie a day, every day. You do have to pay a service fee, a convenience fee, which I thought was very annoying. And you do also pay an upcharge of a couple bucks if you go see a movie in 3D or IMAX.
Which makes sense.
Right. That makes sense, I guess. But the convenience fee, the online convenience fee, I think that's annoying. But anyway, tickets are $17.50 in New York. So if you go to two movies a month, you saved $5. So that's Alamo Drafthouse has fallen in line with everyone else who says, you know what? We know there's enough people who want this that it's worth our while to do it.
Well, what they were trying to do, and I have been speaking with them about this for over a year, they launched a subscription service beta in Yonkers last year at their theater in Yonkers, and then they tested it out. Their big fear was that, and they kind of went, they always, when they talked about it, they went to their biggest customer, who in 2018 saw 400 movies.
Why would you worry about that customer? Why?
Well, here's what they're trying to do. I mean, they realize, yes, it's not a great analogy, but it at least kind of underscores the problem, which is the people that would sign up for a subscription plan are the ones that, you know, go to the movies most often, right? And those people spend a lot of money. So if you look at 400 movies times $10 on average, that's $4,000. You would basically be taking them down to about $400 for the year. And that's what they're trying to avoid. So what they really need is to get not the frequent moviegoers, but the kind of mid-tier moviegoers. That's what they're really
They're ignoring something else. First of all, why look at the outlier? That's ridiculous. That's stupid to look at the one guy who goes to 400 movies a year. You don't make business plans based on that guy. What you do is look at the people who go to your theater a lot, say, what would it cost if I gave them this monthly plan? How much would I lose? Would I make some extra in popcorn? But also, by the way, when that movie Seberg is playing at Arclight, and my guy now goes to movies a lot, maybe he goes to Arclight to see Seberg. But if he's got a monthly plan, he is always going to be loyal to me. And he's going to think of me first and go, yeah, I kind of want to see Seberg, but I got that monthly plan. I'm going to go check out B, C, or D, my second or third choice, because I've already paid for the monthly plan. So you're going to keep that loyalty for that customer that's valuable to you and maybe keep them from going to competition. You know, it's not that you're trying to punish the other company, but you want to, you know, it's a loyalty program. If you're loyal, you should save a little money. And then maybe you'll spend more on popcorn and soda, and you also lock them in. So there's a lot more to look at than one crazy outlier who goes to two movies a day.
Well, at Regal, and this was many years ago when Amy Miles was still there, and so it was pre-acquisition by Cineworld, there was a saying that Amy Miles had, which was don't F with the 2%, because that 2% accounted for close to over, I think it was like 10 or 12% of their revenue. And the 2% of their customers.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's pretty remarkable.
That's true on Broadway. That's true everywhere. You got some passionate people who go a lot. But how many movies do those 2% go to?
I don't know. That I couldn't answer. Right. I don't know. Maybe they went to one movie and they bought like 500 popcorns.
Right.
And guess what?
If only 2% or 10 or 12% of your revenue and you switch to a subscription plan, you'll be getting more revenue for more than 2% of people. Maybe you'll lose a little bit on them, but you'll be gaining a lot because the people who are providing 50 or 60% of your revenue will be giving you a little bit more money because they'll be going more often and they'll be buying a monthly plan.
Well, I also think that at the Alamo Drafthouse, that the sales per person is probably pretty high because they do sell, you know, some high margin items like beer and
right. That's their whole shtick, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, if you're really saying, okay, well, let's using that one example again. Okay, we're going to lose, let's say, $3,700 on that guy, but that guy comes and he eats a cheeseburger every time. Well, guess what? We're now going to make a lot of money.
Well, you're not making any more money because he's already coming.
Well, so true.
You assume he's eating the same amount of money. You're encouraging people to come more often. You're gaining their loyalty. And maybe some marginal people who go to a lot of movies, you'll lose a little money up front on ticket sales, but you'll probably get them to make your theater the first choice rather than go to Arclight or AMC with showing an indie film. Maybe they'll keep going. You'll see every movie you show because they're already paying for it. Anyway, obviously, this is how subscriptions work. Some people are going to save money on it. So what?
I thought this is the way subscriptions work. The New Yorker comes every week, and then I put it on my coffee table, and then they pile up for about like 10 weeks. And then I go, oh my God, I better read some of those. I thought that's how subscriptions work.
But what happened to all the people who were going to band together and do like a subscription service for indie chains? I didn't think it would really matter anyway. I guess it was just to save money on the back room. But aren't some of these smaller chains wanting to launch a subscription service? They just don't have the ability to do it all on their own. They'd rather just sort of partner together.
Yes, that's Infinity. And they are indeed still trying to, you know, convince people that this is a good idea. It's definitely, it took about a year, but they're now finally getting some interest in that.
Oh, very interesting. But even if it says you can go to any one of those chains on the subscription plan, it won't really matter because people are basically living their town anyway. So they're not really going to be, it's not like you'll suddenly get to go to every theater in town because you probably only got one or two and you'll only be subscribing to one of them.
Right. And so, for instance, if Lemley was a part of it here in LA and Pacific Theaters was a part of it here in LA, I'm closer to the Lemley. And if Regency was a part of it, I'm closer to the Regency. Yeah. So I probably only use it at the Regency.
There you go. Well, we're talking about subscription plans, and the WGA and the Big Three talent agencies are talking about how they do business. It wasn't a big breakthrough. It's not like they've both agreed to binding mediation, but they are talking. The WGA said that four out of the Big Five are talking to them. And now there's indications that they are willing to have a mediator work with them and see what they might come up with. It's not binding, as far as I understand, and it's not a particularly big breakthrough, but they are exploring that possibility as well.
Is it more like, hey, mediator, can you come and show these agency guys the error of their ways?
Right. Well, they're both doing it and agreeing to it. But yeah, that seems to, and of course, the agency guys, but could you tell the writers they're being ridiculous? You know, it's a new world. So that's the gist of it. That's what I feel like, that it's a process they're going to go through to show, well, we're talking, but it doesn't sound like it's based on any particular breakthrough or any new you know, point of view or any bindingness or anything like that. So I don't think it's going to be a big deal when all is said and done.
Oh, well, wait a second. If you don't think that's going to be a big deal, then why not take a look at some of the news stories we have in our Big Deal or Big Whoop segment? Big Deal or Big Whoop is our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. How do you like that? I didn't drop the ball on that one.
Very good.
Our first story: Broadway is hitting its target audience. They shouldn't really hit people. It's not very nice when they do that. You know that?
Keep going.
February can be the dog days of winter, but new shows are packing them in and long runners are flourishing. Of the 27 shows on Broadway right now, 21 of them are selling 90% or more of their available tickets. And that's not even including steep discounts to do it. Broadway used to worry that a movie adaptation would kill a show, but that fear, it died long ago with Chicago, which, by the way, is still running. And if anything, the hit Aladdin has enjoyed a modest boost from the billion-dollar movie that came out last year. So who has fallen short of 90%? I mean, who are those? What are those shows? Those are mainstays The Phantom of the Opera, Chicago, the aforementioned Chicago, and Frozen, which sold 89% of tickets. Okay, so that's not so far off 90%. The other three are newcomers that are discounting their tickets and hoping for good word of mouth, including the Bob Dylan musical Girl from the North Country, the drama Grand Horizons about a married couple breaking up after 50 years, sounds hilarious, and the two-part gay play The Inheritance Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big deal. I think they are pricing it right. We talked before about Harry Potter. That show is a two-part play, just like The Inheritance. It's making half of what it was making a year ago. It was grossing $2 million a week. Now it's grossing $1 million a week, but it's still sold out. So they're filling every seat, creating a great experience for people. They're making money every week, and they're not pricing themselves out of the market. It's a really heavy lift to get people to commit to a two-part play, to come all day on Wednesday or Thursday. It's Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday, or Thursday night and Friday night to see part one on Thursday and part two on Friday. That's a lot to ask. So they are doing it right, I think. They are not sticking to that massive price point. They are still grossing money. They're still making money every weekend. They're sold out, which means when people go, the place is full. It's bustling. They're selling a lot of merchandise and everybody's happy and having a fun time. You could have made the same money and had a half empty house and people go, oh, this isn't that fun. So the shows that are scoring that are new are West Side Story, Tina, the Tina Turner musical, Jagged Little Pill, the dramas My Name is Lucy Barton and A Soldier's Play, both of which have starry casts and probably won't run forever. And Six. Six is that sort of concert review type musical about the wives of Henry VIII. It's doing great on streaming. It is like a monster hit on streaming. It's one of the most streamed musicals in years, only behind Hamilton. And this show has played in the UK and toured. It's on cruise ships. And now they're bringing it to Broadway. It looked a little cheesy in my book, but boy, they got off to a good start.
And well, hopefully it's not on the Diamond Princess, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, and you know, Broadway is the same thing. Broadway is mostly seen by women. And if you're thinking about a subscription plan or your audience, I wouldn't talk about the one person who goes to see, you know, 55 shows a year. I would talk about what the vast majority of your audience goes to. How many times do people go to Broadway shows a year? A really heavy theater goer on Broadway is probably going, and like you say, like 10% of the Broadway audience generates like 60% of their revenue, and they go to like 10 or 20 shows a season. So it's good to know what the majority, you know, where that big money is coming from. You don't want to mess with them. But you also want to make smart business plans looking at the whole package, not just some outlier who goes to see 50 shows a year.
Remember when China got mad that the U.S. has freedom of speech?
I do. You know what happened? Was
I think that was actually yesterday and the day before that.
Yeah.
We're referring to that country's fury over the political statements by some U.S. officials linked to the NBA, i.e. NBA employees. Chairman Xi Jinping wants business to shut down for the free speech rights of everyone everywhere, no random comments by players competing in online video games, and certainly no public statements of support for Hong Kong protesters by NBA officials or players, even in their private capacity as citizens. Its strong-arm tactics backfired, and fans started showing up at NBA games being broadcast in China to wave signs of protest. That led to China delaying games and then blacking them out entirely. And right now, no NBA games are being broadcast in China at all. That's cost the NBC? The NBA. It's cost them hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, according to a story in The Guardian. Some say China will relent soon, but the message is clear. If players and officials speak out, the NBA will pay a heavy price. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal. You know, you sort of lose track of stories every once in a while. We talked about it, we covered it, and then we forgot about it. The last I heard, they were just putting games on a delay, meaning they would wait 5 minutes and so they could censor out any footage or shots of the crowd or players saying something they didn't like. But oh, well, that's where they were. And those were only being made available, though, online. But the TV rights were blacked out at that moment, and we forgot. And you know what? They're still blacked out. We don't know what's being shown in China, not a lot. And let's be clear, we're talking about the government that we have issues with, not the people of China. Wonderful people, wonderful country. I've been there. It's lovely. So it's the dictatorial government of China we're talking about. So yes, they may loosen up and let NBA games be shown back on TV. Certainly the TV stations in China want it. So they'll be back to normal, but put that in quotes because they have made it clear to the NBA, you're going to pay a big price if people speak out, and you know they're going to be pressuring and strong-arming players to say, hey, you know, ixnay on the comments, eh? So, Dave?
Well, think about it. It's really also sending a message. It's a chilling effect to anybody that wants to do business there, you know, entertainment-wise or sports-wise. You're basically saying, we expect you not only to not speak out in our country, but you can't do it in your own country.
Right.
That's really the problem here, is that Yeah, I mean, it's okay, fine. If you're going to China, when in Rome, you know. But if you're in the U.S. and you're doing business in the U.S. and you're employed by a U.S. employer and you're doing something in your private, you know, life.
Sorry, China.
Yeah,
sorry,
that's a different. Yeah, it's a different story, and that's basically what happened here.
And they made the NBA lose hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know how the contracts were voided or how it went, but that's what the Guardian estimates. And you know they haven't brought them back yet. So when they do, you know the NBA is going to be giving the stink eye to anybody who speaks up.
Yeah, that's true. And I wonder if it was the general manager of the Houston Rockets that. That kind of made a comment in it kind of in passing on Twitter in kind of support of the Hong Kong protesters. I wonder if that person still has a job. I think they do.
Good point. He does, I believe.
The streaming train keeps on a rolling. You want proof?
Mm-hmm.
The UK has just reached a tipping point. More than 50% of its households subscribe to at least one streaming video on demand service. Netflix has 12 million households there, a leap of almost 20% over 1 year ago. Amazon Prime has some 7 million households, a 35% increase over 2018. And the Sky-owned service Now TV grew 8% to 1.69 million homes. Plus, the BBC's on-demand service is hugely popular. And how did Amazon surge so much? You might be asking that question. Well, it's easy. It made a major play for English Premier League football packages that made them a must-buy for serious soccer fans. In comparison, about 70% of all U.S. households subscribe to at least one SVOD service. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal. It's the way the whole world is going. Streaming is where it's at. That's where the new money is. And anytime people tell you about, oh, cord cutting, let's just look at their total bill for all their entertainment services before you freak out too much. People should be saving a little bit. My brother's got a TV package. He pays $200 a month because he really wants his sports. And he doesn't feel like he can get it online. But he keeps thinking about it and keeps thinking there's got to be a way I can get a cheaper service and not pay $200 a month for cable and Wi-Fi. He doesn't even have TV on it. It's just cable and Wi-Fi. So that's a lot of money. And as soon as he figures out, oh, you know what? I can get the SEC and ACC on apps, maybe on Apple TV or on streaming somewhere, and that'll be cheaper. He's going to go to a digital-only plan. So he's not cutting his cord. He's saving money. He still wants to watch all that stuff. He just doesn't want to pay so much.
Well, you know, I was at a dinner the other night, and I was telling everybody about my...
Who let you out?
Yeah, my 13-year-old daughter who's like addicted to Lucifer on Netflix, and the number of people that were like, oh my God, I love Lucifer. And I thought, well, I guess that's why they're making a fifth or sixth or I don't know, the next season. That they said it was the final season, but they lied because now they're doing another season. And then everybody started talking about TV shows. And here's what I realized halfway through the conversation. Nobody was talking about a show that was actually on cable or on broadcast television.
They were all streaming shows.
They were all. Is that on Hulu or is that on HBO?
Oh, interesting.
Okay, maybe HBO because somebody talked about Westworld. But most of them were like, did you see
the new season of You?
Yeah, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or Atypical or, you know, something on Hulu. The Handmaid's Tale, you know. So it's definitely, or Stranger Things, you know, there was never a, hey, did you see that new show Mom with Allison Janney in it? No, there was none of that.
It's not cool talking about Chicago PD or Chicago Med or Chicago Fire, but they make a lot of money all over the world. So yeah, hipsters may not chat about them at dinner theaters, but they do turn on Grey's Anatomy and The Bachelor at the end of the day.
Well, you know, speaking of streaming, HBO Max, okay, has come up with a very expensive ad campaign to bring attention to the launch of its new streaming service.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this advertisement, it will run 1 hour long, and in an unusual gambit, you'll have to subscribe to HBO Max just to see said ad.
That makes no sense.
It's kind of weird. Yeah, I mean, to watch an entire ad for, I get upset when I've been duped into watching 4 minutes of some video when I'm on YouTube, when they're like, if you just wait till the end of this video, we'll tell you how to lose 50 pounds in just 1 week. But, you know, a whole hour? Good grief. Well, this ad, by the way, is disguised as a one-off TV special and is called The One with the Reunion. That's the name of this ad, okay? Yes, the gang from Friends are back, or rather the actors playing them, they're back. They'll sit around for an hour and gab about the good old days and get paid a cool several million dollars each for the pleasure. And then fans can start binge watching the show all over again. At least that's why HBO Max is paying some $15 to $20 million for the special. They expect it to generate a ton of ink and push anyone thinking of maybe someday subscribing to do so, like, right now, right away. You should stop listening to us and go subscribe to HBO Max. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big whoop that they're doing the special. It seems like a hell of a lot of money just to gain some ink and generate interest. You figure people would know anyway that Friends is coming to HBO Max. Just like in the UK, people are angry. They're getting ready to subscribe. There's a hard word, subscribe to Disney Plus, and they've just found out because of rights issues that The Simpsons is not part of Disney Plus in the UK. In that country, it's owned by Sky TV and Disney doesn't have access to it yet. They will eventually at some point down the road. But right now, you subscribe to Disney Plus in the UK, you don't get The Simpsons. And that was big enough news for it to be a news story in The Guardian or The Independent or something. So, you know, these rights issues are complicated. You do want to get attention for your new service. Everybody's going to know that HBO Max is launching and that they've got Friends. And this special is just one more piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, and I guess because Friends was such a huge hit on Netflix, and everybody will think, well, do I really need HBO Max? Because, you know, I did see, I saw the episode sometimes twice. And this is their way of saying, oh, you need to subscribe because we have this new episode that's the one with the reunion.
Yeah, it's not an episode. Subscribe. It's just a chat fest. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it was if it was the Thanksgiving special, I think that would be more of a lure. To me, that would have been a smarter thing, though I understand why they didn't want to revisit the show. But a Thanksgiving special, Friends get back together even if they moved on with their lives. So I feel like a Thanksgiving special could have worked, but they don't want to have to deal with who's married, who has kids, who doesn't. So I get it.
Well, and to be honest with you, when you think about it, we're talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. It was in every newspaper. It was in every trade publication. It was in a TV news. It was on CNN. It was on. And they're paying basically $20 million to produce an ad. Mm-hmm. That's effectively what they're, not bad money. Speaking of bad, producer Harvey Weinstein is a rapist. He's officially a rapist. That's the verdict of a jury which found the disgraced Hollywood mogul guilty of rape in the third degree and criminal sexual acts in the first degree and has immediately been taken into custody. Needless to say, the verdict will be appealed. He also faces a trial in Los Angeles for sexual misconduct. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
It's a big deal. As far a fall from grace as you've seen in Hollywood. You know, Fatty Arbuckle, you'd have to go back to him or who knows.
Charlie Chaplin, maybe?
No, I don't think Charlie Chaplin.
Because he like ran off with somebody who was underage, but it was like, you know, he was married to that person.
Una O'Neill.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she was young. But that's it was consensual as far as we know. I forget what age she was at the time, but you know, this is entirely different from what we're talking about here. This is a person who has raped and brutalized dozens of people, it's safe to say. And you know, there was no question that he was a bad person and did terrible things. Too many people came forward and told their stories in convincing and similar detail, but that doesn't mean you're going to convict him in a court of law. Because that's very hard to do. That comes down to he said and she said, and that comes down to evidence and other cooperating witnesses, and who did you tell at the time, and will they believe them? So it's not easy, even when you know the person is bad, to actually convict them. So the fact that he was convicted, not on the most serious charge, actually, but rape, third degree, sounds pretty awful. So it's a big, big fall from grace.
You know, I talked to a couple of prosecutors, and actually, I'm about to say something that many prosecutors said in the media, which is it is very hard to prosecute a case like this so far after the fact when you have victims that then communicated with the perpetrator, the accused, afterwards in a friendly and cordial way. Apparently 95% of the time, the person, it's a not guilty verdict.
Yeah, because regardless of the facts of the case, it's just so hard to do, yeah.
And the two prosecutors I spoke with thought, you know, they felt like the prosecutor in New York was pressured to do this, and they, under normal circumstances, would have looked at the evidence and said, wait, you emailed them and called them? And, yeah, no, I can't prosecute this.
Well, they did, and they were successful.
Yeah. Now, okay, tracking who is watching what and where is complicated. We just talked about that, remember? You know?
Yep.
Well, if you ask Nielsen, they'll tell you the same thing, by the way. One company says it has a good idea of who is watching what. Sandvine is a Well, it's called a network intelligence solution provider. That's what they call themselves. And how that might complicate their take on things, we don't really know, actually. But the company says it can track 2.5 billion users across more than 500 mobile, fixed, Wi-Fi, and satellite providers, especially mobile users. And according to Sandvine, video streaming consumes 65% of all mobile traffic. So all those people walking around with their face in their phones, they're watching mobile video. And that mobile video streaming, guess what? YouTube accounts for 25% of it alone. And with Google properties overall, guess what? 30%. So I don't know, what are the other properties that Google owns?
5%, I don't know.
Facebook is just behind that, by the way, responsible for 28% of all mobile traffic by volume. Big deal or big whoop.
That's a lot of numbers. I knew you would love it. So happy.
Yeah, well, and of course, I stumbled over every single one of them.
Well, there's a lot of video streaming going along, and especially on mobile, and a lot of that is caused by YouTube. That's why Quibi wants to get into the business, right? They know people are watching lots of bite-sized entertainment. They know there's a lot of content out there, like music videos and sketches from late-night TV and Saturday Night Live and a million other sources. So it's not like the content, highly professional, highly polished, highly well-made, isn't out there, but they think and know there's an audience for it, and they can make a play in that area, and they're spending the money and getting the people, so they could work, and we know why they don't want to put their content on YouTube. They want to make all the money themselves. So, you know, it's not the craziest thing in the world, but acting like you've reinvented the wheel or nobody's doing this is silly. There's a lot of streaming video out there. YouTube's doing a lot of it, and Facebook has made a big push into streaming video, and that's getting bigger and bigger for them as well. You can see they're almost matching, you know, Google and YouTube to combine. So that's pretty interesting. Oh,
but I wonder if they mean Facebook, all traffic to Facebook, including, you know, when you're checking
your news
feed. No, they're
talking about mobile
video
feed, and they're saying it's mobile traffic, period. So yeah, if you're going on Facebook, but obviously video is a big chunk of that. And by the way, Charlie Chaplin, he married, he had an affair with a woman, and there were some legal issues around that. And there was charges about him moving her across state lines. And then shortly after that is when he announced he was marrying his new protege, Una O'Neill, who was just 18 at the time. So she was an adult.
I knew there was something
but,
like that.
It was just, but they remained married for many years, had 8 children, and were happily married until his death. So it was she was an adult, and it was a true romance.
Well, that, other than the little bit about Charlie Chaplin there, that sounds very insidery baseball. So why don't we wrap up Big Deal or Big Whoop and move into Inside Baseball. Inside Baseball is where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. Here's how this story affects you. Do not go outside. Do not go to the movie theater. Do not go to public places.
Well, let's
not get on a cruise ship.
Instead of listening to Sperling, let's listen to medical professionals and let them tell us what we should be scared about and what is a reasonable thing to do. Should we go to hardware stores and buy $1,000 mask so we have an actual mask that works well enough for protection? Or is it still okay to go to the grocery store, et cetera? But, you know, they'll let us know. They're learning more about the COVID-19 or the coronavirus. They're learning that people can be, is it infectious or contagious? I forget. What's the word when you can spread it to others?
Infectious and contagious.
Contagious.
You are contagious.
Before you show symptoms. So that's important to know. It looks like its fatality rate is about 20 times higher than, say, the typical flu season. So in the typical flu season, about 0.1% of people who get it die. And that's a lot because hundreds of thousands of people die every year from the flu in North America. It can really kill
people.
Actually,
I think it was 12,000 last year.
Was it 12,000? I'm sorry, over the last few years. So millions of people get sick. And thousands can die. This virus fatality rate is about 2%. So about 2% of the people who are getting it seem to be dying. So that's a much higher fatality rate. So it's more serious than the flu, but the flu
and spreads. It's far more contagious, is what they're finding out too.
It's very contagious. I don't know if it's more contagious than the flu, but it is very easily contagious. And so it's having a lot of ripple effects. This is just a small sampling of probably all the delays and pauses and ends of business deals and plans and meetings and stuff going on. The K-pop supergroup BTS, they have made their next press conference an all-digital affair. They don't want people coming to Korea, and they know people want to be safe. Doolittle, the film, has delayed its China release. So has Sonic the Hedgehog, which we just mentioned. Two Wong Kar-wai projects that were going to be filming. One was a series for Amazon. Another was a film and a series that has been delayed. Disney's pushing back the release of a Pixar film called Onward. That's moving to late April in China. And of course, lots of Chinese companies have delayed or pushed their movies back. So everybody's going to be jostling for a release date, you know, in a few months.
And I would be willing to bet that all of those release dates, like the board is going to be wiped clean all those films are going to be have to be redated.
Oh, absolutely. They are. They're already redating tons of movies. I mean, it's March, you know, it's February. The Bologna Book Fair, that has moved to May, tentatively.
Well, now the Bologna Book Fair is not in China.
No, it's not. We're not talking about just China. We're talking about Korea, China. Now we've moved on to Germany. Now we're moving to New York. The New York Toy Fair has canceled the China Pavilion at that annual trade show because they're not being allowed into the country. And like I mentioned, Chinese athletes were denied attendance at the gymnastic events in Melbourne, which could help them qualify for the Olympics as individual athletes. Universal was asked about its plans for a theme park. It has ones opening up in China in 2021. And they're like, is that still going to happen? They're like, yes, yes, for God's sakes, we're not canceling a giant theme park forever because of COVID-19. That is scheduled for 2021. We still plan to do that. And of course, if construction gets delayed because of that, that might happen. But you know, now what's happening? The stock prices of companies in North America are starting to take a hit, especially entertainment stocks like Disney, Amazon, Viacom, CBS. They've all taken a hit today. We're in the middle of Monday. It's down 4%. Things could go back up. But everybody's talking about COVID-19 and how that's going to impact business. Apple has talked about delays in cell phones. Other people have talked about that. Video games are getting delayed. So there's a lot going on here. So there's 2 months of missing box office from the second biggest market in the world. And of course, the irony here is that most of those were Chinese films because Hollywood doesn't get to open up movies during the Chinese New Year. So most of the Hollywood dates are just starting to be impacted right now. But you can bet when they redo all these schedules, Chinese films are going to get priority.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I said they're all going to be redated.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And some Chinese cinemas now are selling snacks online. They're like, oh, you're home watching streaming? Can we send you some popcorn? They're trying.
That's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, and they're selling memorabilia that they normally wouldn't online, trying to make up, clear out their inventory, which is sitting there, and maybe make up for lost business. And Xi, the leader of the country, has vowed that China will meet its 2020 goals for the economy.
I don't know how that's even possible, but that said, there has been some discussion, and this was a couple of weeks ago. This is when 99% of the COVID-19 cases were in China. So, you know, there was some talk about, will the Tokyo Olympics take place this summer?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the attendance will certainly be down.
You know, I got a couple of emails, 2 weeks ago, a couple, probably like 8 to 10, including people would like reserve their booth space at CinemaCon. And then for some reason, they'd start reaching out and calling people like me and saying, hey, have you heard, is CinemaCon being canceled? I heard CinemaCon might be canceled. What did you hear? Are you sure that CinemaCon? And CinemaCon is the annual trade show in Las Vegas of movie theater owners and operators and film distributors. And it takes place every year in March or April. And the question was, will it be canceled? The answer is no, it has not been canceled yet. In fact, more studios are signing on. And yeah, the key is yet. As long as studios are signing up, this thing is going to take place. And it is at the very end of March, beginning of April.
So that's 5-6 weeks away.
Correct.
Five weeks away.
My gut tells me this is the week that they're going to have to make that decision. And I think that it will still take place.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we haven't had big outbreaks in North America, and those are going to be people based in North America, right? It's not a worldwide convention.
It is a worldwide convention.
It is.
And what I think it depends, like I said, a lot will depend on the next 7 days to see how far it spreads in Europe. Because if it spreads in Europe beyond where it is now, and it probably will a little bit, then people will really have to start considering canceling shows I can't imagine they'll cancel.
Well, you got to talk to the health and medical professionals. It shouldn't be made a decision made out of fear. It should be made based on what health professionals tell us. They're learning more about this illness and disease every day of the week.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are saying, hey, remember when the Chinese said, you know, told us all this stuff about it and we had to believe them because everything was happening in China and now it's not in China anymore? And we're going, yeah, none of that, actually only part of it was true, because this thing is spreading far faster than we thought and it's far more contagious than we thought. And we don't think we were being told everything.
Yep. Well, that's a totalitarian state for you. They're not good on the information sharing.
No.
But people have died from the COVID-19. It's very sad, of course. You know,
none of the people in our obituary section.
A delay in business is one thing. Death is quite another. But it is time for the obituary section. Let me start with a great stage actress, Zoe Caldwell. She died at 86. She's a four-time Tony winner. She won for Medea, The Prime of Miss Jean Brody, which Maggie Smith did on film, and Masterclass, which she played opera legend Maria Callas. Just a great actress, very well known. Broadway is going to dim the lights for Zoe Caldwell when she died at 86. But you know what? She's not the one they talked about on the evening news. She's not the one that everybody says, oh, yeah, people who've never been to Broadway. You know, this is the power of TV, because Zoe Caldwell died. She has been widely and appropriately celebrated by all the people who love theater. But you're on a TV show. You got a link to a TV theme song. That's real fame.
What? I mean, first of all, I saw Masterclass. Great show. Mm-hmm. I thought she was fantastic in it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was just segueing into Jeanette Dubois of Good Times.
Oh, okay.
She died at 74. And while Zoe Caldwell died, I don't remember them mentioning her at the end of the evening news, but at the end of at least ABC News with David Muir, there was a little kicker about Jeanette Dubois. She starred on Good Times. She, as we said, she's moving on up after dying at 74. She had a great swan song just a few months ago, because they did that All in the Family Good Times live special in prime time, and she made an appearance on that. That was that special overseen by Norman Lear and Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
She was well known for her role on the groundbreaking Norman Lear sitcom Good Times. And in the weird U.S. sitcom category of memorable entrances, like Lenny and Squiggy on Laverne and Shirley, Kramer on Seinfeld, she was known doing it with style again. You know, she'd burst into the room from, you know, the house next door, and you'd make an entrance, and, the, you know, they'd applaud and laugh just at their mere appearance. You know, this happens on sitcoms in the U.S. I don't know if there's a tradition in other countries, but that sort of, oh, Jerry, you know, Kramer comes stumbling in, people laugh for a minute, and he hasn't said anything yet. Well, she did great versions of that back in the 70s. Very famous for that. She won an Emmy for doing voice work on the stop-motion animated series The PJs with Eddie Murphy, but that's still not why most people immediately go, oh, yeah.
What is it? What, the a song, right?
That's right, the theme song. She co-wrote and sang the theme song for The Jeffersons, Moving On Up, you know, and you're moving
to the
on
east
up.
Side.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody knows it.
A deluxe apartment in the sky.
And I have no idea about her personal finances. She was on Good Times for, what, six seasons or something like that?
I believe so, yeah.
There is no chance in hell she ever made more money from anything else in her career than she did from that theme song. That,
I bet you're right.
That was a lifetime annuity. God bless her. So well known for that. You know, The Jeffersons and Good Times, everybody's going to remember you.
What about author Charles Portis? Why is he known?
Well, he died at 86. He's a reclusive writer. He began as a journalist at the New York Herald Tribune. And like a lot of journalists, he said, you know what? I got a book in me. And he told his colleagues, I'm moving to Arkansas. I'm going to live in a fishing shack and I'm going to write novels. And they're all like,
I've got some true grit in me.
Yeah, that's right. And they roll their eyes. And you know who his colleagues included? Jimmy Breslin,
Tom Wolfe, and Nora Ephron.
Yeah, that's a murderer's row at New York Herald Tribune right there. So if nothing else, he might have inspired some of the best writers of his time to have a go at it. But he was first, and some would say in some ways the best. All his books have passionate cult followings, including Norwood, The Dog of the South, which I believe my professor Padgett Powell at a University of Florida was a big fan of, Masters of Atlantis, and Gringos. But his second novel is the one that secured his name forever, True Grit. Great, great novel. If you've never read it, you've seen the film and you think you know it, the book is much better. It's been made into a film twice, the first time winning John Wayne his only competitive Oscar, and the second time it got 10 nominations, including Best Picture, for the Coen brothers. And it's a great, great novel, a strong female voice narrating it. I have not read any of his other books. They're almost all out of print. I think one or two was finally brought back just a year or two ago, but I've for quite a while been meaning to check Norwood and The Dog of the South out. And now that he's died, yeah, I used to think it was ghoulish to say, oh, they're dead, I'm going to listen to your album. There's no better way to celebrate someone's life. So if you've never read True Grit, by all means, go do it.
Well, speaking of people whose albums you should be listening to and who are no longer here, Andrew Weatherall, who was a DJ and very well-known producer out of London, he died at the age of 56, quite unexpectedly, of a pulmonary embolism. He was a producer. He kind of helped launch England's acid house scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of united rock and rave music, and he produced Primal Scream's Screamadelica.
Yeah, that's probably his masterpiece, Screamadelica. But he was a big DJ, a big producer. You know, he did a lot of cool stuff. He was known for the synth he used, the Roland TB-303. He got really cool sounds out of this vintage 1960s synthesizer. But he did all sorts of stuff. And he loved Orson Welles. He often quoted him talking about making Citizen Kane. You do it in the confidence of ignorance. You know, you're like, you don't know what you don't know, and you just go ahead and you do it, and you break rules without even knowing you're breaking a rule. And so that's how he felt like he did such great stuff, especially in his early 20s. But, you know, a sad passing, very quickly, very unexpected, but he's left his mark.
I love that he said, I never meant this to be a career. It was just a job that paid for new clothes and records.
That's right. Yeah, he said he didn't know that he was breaking rules because I don't know what the rules are.
Right. He's like, you still put the needle on the record, right? I mean, that concludes our obituary section for this week and moves us into listener email. And you'll be very happy, Michael, because Eddie Ginsberg wrote in. And he says, okay, if you enjoy this show as much as I do, and it was, what was the police show?
Oh, Police Squad.
Police Squad, yes. Police Squad. The subject was Police Squad, and I neglected to copy over the subject. He says, if you love Police Squad as much as he does, there are many complete episodes available on YouTube. And he thanks us for all the shows, and he says, good luck with the upcoming number 500. So thank you, Eddie, for writing into dirt@showbizsandbox.com. I have a feeling the silence is Michael going to YouTube.
I was indeed. So I'm trying to see if there are ads on it or whether they're just on here illegally.
I think probably the latter.
Yeah, it looks like they're there inappropriately. I'm surprised they're still up there. But yes, there are a few complete episodes on YouTube. I encourage you, if there's a place you can find them legally, support that first. We're not trying to send people to buy. I, as you were talking, I'm like, if you enjoy the show as much as I do, I'm like, is Showbiz Sandbox on YouTube? Is somebody filming us? That's what I thought was going on. But no, it's Police Squad, yes. And it is coming out on Blu-ray and DVD again. So you will be able to rent it if you subscribe to Netflix and their DVD service. You'll be able to get access to it that way again, or it's well worth the $20 for the whole series. Trust me, if you like the airplane movies, it's a great, great show.
Now, speaking of subscribing, you can subscribe to our show in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can usually find us. Please do rate and review our show in any of those podcast aggregators. Subscribe to our show. It does help us out when you do. That information, as well as links to all of the stories we've discussed on today's episode, can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That is also where you'll find ways to contact us. dirt@showbizsandbox.com is our email address. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. We'll play it in our listener correspondence section. That number is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. Please do call us. We'd love to hear your voice. You can also follow us on Twitter. @ShowbizSandbox is our handle. Or like us on Facebook. Facebook.com/ShowbizSandbox. Again, all of that information is on our website, ShowbizSandbox.com. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website, whoismgmt.com. Michael Gilt has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
FreeHongKong.com. And we just got banned in China.
Wow. Okay. So it's the FreeHongKong.com, but not the we just got banned in China part.
That's right.
Well, if you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry there, why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com, where all of his work is aggregated. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.
I'm looking at the Police Squad. There were only 6 episodes, and I've forgotten. One thing was they always said, and Rex Hamilton as Abraham Lincoln, even though he was never in the show as Abraham Lincoln, but they showed him every week. And they also would flash the title of the episode called, like, The Broken Promise, but the voiceover guy would say, a substantial gift. Like, they always had, one penalty would announce another. Every episode, a dangerous assignment. Ring of Fear! It's just, I love that show.